Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
A warm welcome to the next episode of our Care in Action podcast. Today we are doing another online podcast with a colleague, an appreciated colleague of mine from Care Norway. Please, let's welcome together Moira Eknes. Hi, Moira.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being my guest. Moira is at the moment senior advisor at Care Norway, and she did something very special, and that's the reason why we have invited her. She helped pioneer one of the most powerful grassroots tools in development, the so-called village and loan groups. And her work with Care in preparation for that podcast, she revealed to me that in 1990, she started working with Care. And briefly after her beginning at Care in 1991, she began with a simple but really brilliant idea. We talk about a lockable metal cash box with three keys, so women could save together and access small loans on their own terms. This was the birth hour of the famous village saving and loan groups. And since these days, the model has scaled from one village to thousands of groups, and today reaches millions of people across Africa, Latin America, and also Asia. So Moira, I'm really eager to have the conversation with you to get us started. And in preparation for today, in 2025, Care had 30 million of, or supported 30 million of VSLA members across 67 countries, which is an unbelievable high number. And we aim to support 50 million by 2030. So this is really many more inhabitants than our countries, Norway and Austria, have together. That's an enormous number. But before we take a deeper dive, take us back to the beginning. Let's go back to Niger in 1991. Mm-hmm. And why was it so important? How did it come that you invented, I think, together with the women in Niger? How did it start? What was the sparking moment?
Well, I had been recruited through Care Norway at the time to initiate and lead a tree planting project for women. So, you know, the financial solutions, microfinance, was not really part of my field of expertise, but I was educated in management of natural resources and sustainable agriculture, and Niger being an agricultural context. I thought we would be doing other things, but during interviews with women for the first survey to prepare do the planning, it became clear that women weren't interested in planting trees. So what everybody talked about was how they had to survive by, you know, adding to the agriculture aspect other income generating activities. I mean, they normally would get a plot of land when they married, but it would always be too small to provide enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were engaged in small petty trade or food processing for sales, etc., but often experienced involuntary stops because they lacked capital to buy ingredients and inputs. And it was hard to save, right? So I thought, well, we won't get any way unless we address this problem. So
in order to get the tree planting project going, you had to you had to incentivize somehow that this project could be implemented by really focusing on something that the women themselves raised vis-a-vis you in your conversations.
Yes.
Isn't that a weird situation somehow? What did you think when you noticed I will not have my tree planting project like planned?
I was a bit worried, but because the donors were constantly asking, you know, how many trees have been planted now? Mm-hmm. The model was very slowly developed, right? And I inquired with the women, you know, asked them, what do you do to when you need cash? So sometimes they would talk about loan sharks, or they would go to, you know, they humiliated themselves, as they said, mm-hmm. to ask parents or relatives or so. But they also told me about the tontines, or the so-called, in English, they call them merry-go-rounds, which is a sort of rotating savings and credit mm-hmm. association system that is traditional all over Africa. But that is a system that lasts for, you have a circle of 10 people and then they put 10 euros, let's say, in a pot, and that circulates through the 10 members over 10 weeks, let's say. But it's, you know, it's very punctual and doesn't grow that much. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, what can we do to make that more sustainable? So that was sort of the initial thoughts. But then we did a lot of other activities besides mm-hmm. that to improve their economy. But over time, the savings and credit part of the VSLAs took more hold and became more important for the women.
I think this is an amazing example how you have to shift your plans sometime when you get institutional funding, because CARE is highly relying traditionally all the decades. We have 80 years of CARE, and our beginning were the CARE packages and the close cooperation with institutions and governments. So, and it is like that today, but I would say in the last 30 years, and that's time spent 35 years, that we went back now with the example of Moira. Many things have changed, and nowadays we have much better and much more open conversations with institutional funders to really do and present projects that were also already designed at the so-called grassroots level, and that as many people as necessary and possible from the region where the project should take place are already involved in the project design. So nowadays it would be much harder to discover that we plan the project that is not to the direct need of the people who are involved in the project, right? So this for sure has changed in the last 30 years.
Absolutely. But I must say that the donors, representatives from the donors, came on a short notice visit, and I was a bit taken aback, but we took them to some of the first villages where women's groups were well organized, and they were so amazed by what they heard and saw that they didn't continue asking about the trees.
which is really fabulous, and I can assure you, I was in Niger myself several times some years ago, and trees would also be desperately needed in a country that is part of the Sahel. So the intention behind the tree project was the right one, but yes, you have to listen to those who should implement it, and you have to provide a quick win to those people involved in a project in order to attract them and keep them going over years. So reforestation is never a bad idea, but if you don't generate any income, then the appetite for reforestation, mine would also be low, to be honest. Yeah, a lot of work and a long-term perspective in many cases, yeah. Right?
No, absolutely. But Because, I mean, CARE was running a tree planting project at the time with windbreaks, etc., that did improve agricultural production, but on the big fields where the men were farming. But in that area where we worked, as I said, the women had small plots, mm-hmm. but they got them when they married. An evaluation of this big tree planting project was very positive, but concluded that women were not involved or did not benefit. So, which is why they had decided they wanted to do this for women. But women, when they divorce, they lose access to the plot that they have been cultivating. Mm-hmm. So there was no interest for them to invest a lot of effort in a context where, I think 45% of the women we talked to were in their second or third marriage. Mm-hmm. You see?
So imagine.
Yeah. So at the time, you know, a lot of the programs were focusing on men. This was in times mm-hmm. where women's projects became, it was in the beginning almost mm-hmm. Of this. But anyway, I would also like to add that a lot of these women are now engaged in tree planting production for sale, like fruit trees.
So you see, when it adds to their income, then the motivation is higher, which is a good thing. And dear listeners, appreciated audience, we took you back now 35 years into the past, and all our listeners who listen on a regular basis to this podcast know that CARE is one of the organizations who have not only on paper, but a real focus on women and girls. And yes, the rights-based approach, but income generating. And this is very true also for countries like Austria and Norway. If you want to be a free, independent woman, look after your income. And then many things are easier. I'm not saying that this is solving everything, but it gives you a different starting point than women without income. And you can guess now that already talking a lot about girls and women, the village saving and loan groups are a success model. And 80% of the participants of the 30 million that I quoted 2 minutes ago are women. So men are also participating, but low-key, 20% or something. And 80% of the participants are women. This is why it fits so well into the work of CARE today. And Moira, in simple words, if I don't have a clue what we are talking about, describe what is a village saving and loan group. What's it all about in the end?
A village savings and loan association is a local member owned and run savings bank, basically, where, you know, the capital is mobilized exclusively among contributions from the members. And they have internal rules that the members decide on. They have steering committees with, on democratic terms. They meet regularly, often weekly, to put their contributions together. And then from the fund, they can have loans that they pay back with interests, usually. And the interest, I mean, everything is decided by the members themselves. And then every maybe once a year they take out their savings with interest then, and then they can invest the funds as they wish. And then they often, you know, it start over again, often with a higher minimal amount than mm-hmm. than the first time.
To be very clear, this is a model that can be installed in all countries. There are no restrictions by governments to have this microfinance tool in place. And the simple reason for that is that there is no external money in the box. As Moira said, it's only the little saving of the group members. So CARE never give starting funding or something. And this is one of the main critical points of microfinance tools. If you think about India, where we heard that many people couldn't pay back, some really committed suicide because they were so despaired, they couldn't pay back their loans. And this is always when foreign, not only foreign aid, but external money is involved. First point. So these are small amounts that people can handle in the group. Second, the people in such a saving and loan group are not bankable. That means they don't have enough access. Many of them are illiterate. They would not be accepted by even a local bank branch. And what is so beautiful to see that we have so many, throughout many African countries, I've experienced it myself, that some of the groups were so successful over the years that they became bankable and that they could put relatively high amounts of money to the bank, and that many of the husbands involved really have a business now because their women participated for many years in village saving and loan groups. And isn't it also an aspect that many of the women get trainings for small business plans? They get financial education, basic financial education. Isn't that also very attractive for many of them?
It brings me back to the first evaluation we did, actually, of the VSLAs. I had expected that, what they would rate the highest was the ability to access loans. Mm-hmm. But that came after the opening of the mind, is how they expressed it, the ability to learn, and then the solidarity that developed among the members. Mm-hmm. That was those were the two main points. And then the ability to save, because it's not easy to save on your own. Because when you have money in the pocket, it's always easy to just, address the immediate needs or requests from family members. But when it's stored somewhere, we can't have daily access, then you actually are able to accumulate something to a useful amount, right?
They put together some savings, but where do they put it? Mm. In a class or somewhere?
Yeah. Well, they put it in a box, but in the beginning, we didn't have the boxes. They put them, they hid them in calabashes or in in some, container of some sorts. But one day I was in visited one of the first villages where we started, and the treasurer came to me and said, "Moira, I'm getting visitors every evening because people know that I'm keeping the money for the group, and like the village chief, my husband, it's really difficult for me to not allow them to have a loan or give them money." So, okay, that's a serious issue. So we discussed it a bit, and I said, "Well, what if you had a box with three padlocks and you didn't have the keys to any of them? Would that solve your problem?" "Yes," she said, "that would solve my problem." So that's where we started with the box and the three key holders who were not the treasurer. So at least four people had to be from the group had to be together to get access to the box. So yes, that's where the money is kept when it's not out in loans among the members.
So Niger is anyhow one. Also today in the World Development Index, it's ranked amongst, I think, the last five still. So we talk about one of the poorest countries in the Sahel region, where even if you have a larger plot of land, until today, it is subsistence economy that we are talking about. So there is not a lot of surplus that is created. So what is produced is consumed inside the family. And it is not a given that people can go to school, girls can go to school, but also boys, it's not a given that they can go to school. You don't have a lot of shops in these villages. I remember I was traveling very the neighboring country a lot in Mali, and this was only 10 years ago, the only vegetable available in remote areas of Mali were onions. That's it.
Hmm.
In many regions, no bread, nothing. You don't have a bakery or something. Yeah. So the idea of creating in these remote villages in the Sahel a sort of local economy where you have a bakery, where you have, a shoe producer and things like that on a very small scale basis really is extraordinary. And I think that our listeners can't even imagine how dire the living situation is in many countries in the Sahel where CARE is working with the most vulnerable people is for them. And this you have to understand as a background, listening to why village saving and loan groups really are game changers in the life of millions of people. But Moira, when did you think this is a life changer for many? When did this come to you?
The first time I saw a group distributing the savings that they had, accumulated over a year or so, and then seeing the members with the money in their hand, saying that I've never had this much money at the same time, and it's mine, you know. Seeing that excitement and listening to their ideas, just thought, you know, this is amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but exactly when that was, I can't really remember. But I've seen. Yeah, there was one woman who came to me, that was quite early actually, proudly telling me that she had, her husband had fallen down from a tree and hurt, broken his arm, and mm-hmm. she was able to pay for transport. As you said, these are rural, you know, mm-hmm. isolated places. And she was able to call a transport, pay for that and pay for his medical fees.
Imagine.
And that gave her so much pride mm-hmm. and, power in her mind. So, yeah, that was another instance. And then having received several times people coming to my office from villages we weren't working at the mm-hmm. time, requesting that we come and work with the women in their village as well. That was like, yeah, but we're not giving them anything. It was like, mm-hmm. but it's the having the possibility to sit together for a purpose and learn and do something together. And of course, the financial aspects of it all. But it mm-hmm. was, yeah.
But out of their own power. So it's not
exactly.
like that. And this gives us a good opportunity to highlight. It's not like that people are sitting and waiting what an NGO is handing over to them. We have seen it so many times that if you spark real innovation and really provide some education also, then people really... This is empowerment. This is what is real empowerment, because they did it by themselves and they are still doing it. The lifetime of such a village saving and loan group, some of them are there for decades, right?
Mm. Absolutely.
How many many members do they have in average? What would you say?
In average, I would say 25. We in the beginning we experimented with various sizes, but some of them had 60 members or 70, but it became
too big to handle.
So 25 is the ideal number to mm-hmm. be able to handle, but to also have enough funds to mm-hmm. start. So that is what we seek, but it's not all, you know, some are smaller, some are slightly bigger, but they are self-selecting members and self-governed. So they elect, the members elect a president and a treasurer, a secretary and controllers, etc. But it's also very important that we as outsiders do not tell them who should become members or not. That they have to decide among themselves who wants to join and who can join. So in most villages, actually, you will find several groups after mm-hmm. some time. Yeah. And they might join together in the networks for more strategic purposes.
Which is, collaboration is a good thing, even if we are told by some of our political leaders that we should overthink it and rethink it, but collaboration is a good thing. And I had the chance, I was present, I don't remember exactly the country, but it was somewhere in West Africa where they selected the leaders of one of the groups. And I never will forget it. There was one man candidating to be the cashier mm-hmm. of the group. Yeah. And there were all over women and a handful of men. And the man said, no, I have to be the one who has the box and the key because I can read and write. This is the reason why I have to do it as a man. He was a nice guy, yeah? But the women, they were so strong. And then they pushed forward one out of the circle. She's also able to read and write, so she can do it. And he did not win the election. No. But it was in this setting, it was very important. And I saw it several times. Those who were at least semi-literate had better chances to do the jobs in the beginning. Has that changed, or is that still important?
What often happened was that they will select a younger woman who has some schooling mm-hmm. as the secretary, but still, even though she is able to read and write and put, all the members need to know the situation of the fund, yeah. right? So, mm-hmm. so everything should be orally presented.
Saving per se in rural areas is something really precious, because what can you do when you save some money? You can have a cow. This can be a game changer for the nutrition situation of a family, right? You can buy an agricultural tool, a plough with two cows, maybe, if you are very successful. So I've seen a lot of things from hairdressing to bakeries. So everything that you need on a daily basis, and that you are really better, a little bit better than your neighbor. And it's also important that not everybody's doing the same, because otherwise it wouldn't fly as well. And these, I think, are the extreme important side effects of village saving and loan. This is really rural development from the basis. So Moira, I would like to hear your opinion, your personal opinion. We have touched upon it briefly in the beginning, that there are a lot of financial tools in the whole development sector that are used. What is the biggest advantage, you would say, of the village saving and loan groups? And what is the biggest disadvantage? Is there a disadvantage from your point of view in comparison to microcredits and all the other tools that we know, especially from India, the famous Grameen Bank? I mean, they did a lot of good things, in spite of the fact that for some people it was too much money that they handled and they couldn't pay back their loans. So biggest advantage, biggest disadvantage?
Well, I think the biggest advantage is that it reaches deeper than most microfinance, or certainly banks, further and deeper, and is a you know, can be adapted to the conditions and the capacity of the members, right? As you said, a lot of the problem with the microfinance is that it's not perceived as profitable to serve people who cannot handle a credit of less than, let's say, $200, which can be a lot of money to handle mm-hmm. for, and put people in deep risk. Right? Mm-hmm. As you take a loan, you put yourself in risk. But this mm-hmm. is based on, you know, people's own savings and adapted to their capacity. And then slowly it lets them develop their capacity. But I don't think, I mean, they're not mutually exclusive, right? So as you mentioned already, you know, some of these women in VSLAs transition to become clients to more formal institutions as their businesses grow. and the needs for more secure savings, maybe, and larger credit amounts. But it's important that they know what the terms are and are able to negotiate. And that's another aspect of the VSLAs, is that, you know, they learn financial literacy. Mm-hmm. And then they also get a voice. And that's those two aspects are very important for the way further for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in 35 years, a lot has changed. And mm-hmm. today we are talking about mobile money, digital finance. You talked about financial literacy, and now is an additional layer, which is digital literacy, right? Mm-hmm. Nowadays. Mm-hmm. And how do you see the future of VSLA? Will it provide some answers also to digital literacy, maybe? Is this the platform to start?
Well, I think, you know, there are groups who use mobile money and have a three different codes instead of the three padlocks on the box, mm-hmm. etc. But I hope, you know, that the transparency and the room for meeting, discussing among members will prevail in some form or other, be it over social social media, yeah. or, you know, mm-hmm. Something like that. But I'm
so open. You have your doubts. You're open to it, but you have your doubts. I'm quite optimistic, to be honest, because mm-hmm. I think also in many countries where CARE is working, we have experienced during Corona that digitalization really can help. At the same time, we must be aware that 50% of the global population today has no access to the internet, digitalization does not necessarily mean that you are always connected, like we have the privilege to be, with the internet. So there are various possibilities. And I think that as we did a lot of financial education in our village saving and loan groups, some of them, depending on the context and on the composition of the group, it might be also a starting point for some sort of digital education, and we talk about basics here, and this might open a new world to many other women and girls who have been deprived in their life to have access to quality education, because nowadays it's nice to be able to read and write, but we are talking about quality education on a global level, and this is much more than sitting under a tree and learning the ABC, which is better than nothing. But it's by far not good enough for no place in this world any longer. Yeah. Would you agree to that, Moira?
Absolutely, yes.
So we had a long conversation, and I would like to end on a positive tone and on a personal level. How has this journey with CARE changed you?
I've been thinking about that question. But
you're very famous inside CARE. I've never met you, but I knew for many years there is a Moira Agnes existing in CARE Norway. And when I saw that our podcast numbers were flying, I thought, okay, she's really the star of CARE, so we have to interview her. So did this change something in your personality as well, as the inventor of such a super tool?
Well, I feel always very humble when people mention that, you know, you invented this, and this is, you know, see the results, and this is all because, yeah, it's. I was very, very lucky to be where I was at the time I was, and to meet those fantastic women, and not to speak the village agents that I recruited at the time. Without them, this wouldn't have, you know, even started, right? So I don't know what my life would have been if I hadn't, you know, been there, but it certainly made me stay with CARE instead of going with other organizations, because I want to, you know, I wanted to follow these, even though in care today, there are so many experts, working with this, and the model has been revised and refined and spread, since that time I was in Niger. And I've been doing other things in care, but it's like they've always been there in my heart. And I think, being engaged in your community is something that I've learned, from working with the VSLAs. That has maybe had some impact on my personal life, that I'm, engaged in the local associations, in the housing and welfare associations in my communities. That's a way to meet and to discuss and solve things. Yeah.
This was the very humble answer of one care superwoman, allow me to say that. Maybe it is typical for us women that we always give the credits to others. Obviously, Moira Agnes co-created, we would say today, with local people, a genius idea. Otherwise, we wouldn't have 30 million people at the moment saving and sitting and working and learning from village saving and loan groups. Moira said it kept her for decades with care. And this is also the rationale behind this podcast, dear listeners. We want you to connect with care, to support the global work of care, and to really meet some of the fabulous people that we have inside care. And Moira Agnes, without doubt, is outstanding.
Thank you so much. This was very pleasant.
Yeah, and I hope you enjoyed it. Our listeners should have enjoyed it too. And one thing is for sure, we hear each other latest next week. Thank you, Moira, and bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about care and our projects, visit care.at. There, you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.